and he appeared. Trapped within Rhysand's mind, his powers stifled and body-weary, there was nothing I could do but watch, as the King of Highburn stepped from below decks and smiled at my mate. Chapter 37. Blood slid from the tips of Rhys's twin blades onto the deck. One drop, two, three. Mother above. The king. The King of Highburn wore his own colors, slate gray, embroidered with bone-colored thread. Not a weapon on him. Not a speckle of blood. Within Rhys's mind, there was no jagged breath for me to take. No heartbeat to thunder in my chest. There was nothing I could do but watch. Watch and keep quiet so I didn't distract him. Didn't risk taking his focus away for one blink. Rhys met the king's dark eyes, bright beneath heavy brows, and smiled.
Glad to see you're still not fighting your own battles.
The king's answering smile was a brutal slash of white.
I was waiting for more interesting quarry to find me.
His voice was colder than the highest peak of the Illyrian Mountains. Rhys didn't dare look away from him, not as his magic unfurled, sniffing out every angle to kill the king. A trap. It had been a trap to discover which High Lord hunted down the source of that damper first. Rhys had known one of them. The king, his cronies, would be waiting here. He'd known. And come. Known and not asked us to help him.
If I was smart,
Rhys said to me, his voice calm and steady,
I'd find some way to take him alive, make Asriel break him, get him to yield the cauldron, and make an example of him to the other bastards thinking of bringing down that wall.
Don't, I begged him. Just kill him. Kill him and be done with it, Rhys. End this war before it can truly begin. A pause of consideration.
But a death here, quick and brutal. His followers would turn it against me, no doubt.
If he could manage it. The king had not been fighting, had not depleted his reserves of power, but Rhys. I felt Rhys size up the odds alongside me. Let one of us come to you. Don't face him alone. Because trying to take the king alive without full access to his power? Information rippled into me, brimming with all Rhys had seen and learned. Taking the king alive depended on whether Asriel was in good enough shape to help. He and Cassian had taken a few blows themselves, but nothing they couldn't handle. Nothing to spook the Illyrians still fighting under their command. Yet.
Seems like the tide is turning,
Rhys observed, as the armada around them indeed pushed Highburn's forces out to sea. He had not seen Tarquin, or Varian and Criseida. But the summer court still fought, still pushed Highburn back, back, back from the harbor. Time. Rhys needed time. Rhys lunged toward the king's mind and met nothing. Not a trace, not a whisper. As if he were nothing but wicked thought and ancient malice. The king clicked his tongue.
I'd heard that you were a charmer, Rhysand. Yet here you are, groping and pawing at me like a green youth.
A corner of Rhys's mouth twitched up.
Always a delight to disappoint, Highburn.
Oh, on the contrary,
the king said, crossing his arms, muscle shifting beneath.
You've always been such a source of entertainment, especially for my darling Amarantha.
I felt it, the thought that escaped Rhys. He wanted to wipe that name from living memory. Perhaps one day he would. One day he'd erase it from every mind in this world, one by one, until she was no one and nothing. But the king knew that. From that smile, he knew. And everything he had done. All of it. Kill him, Rhys. Kill him and be done with it.
It's not that easy, was his even reply. Not without searching this ship, searching him for that source of the spell on our power and breaking it. But if he lingered much longer, I had no doubt the king had some nasty surprise waiting, designed to spring shut at any moment. I knew Rhys was aware of it too. Knew because he rallied his magic, assessing and weighing, an asp, ready to strike.
The last report I received from Amarantha, the king went on, sliding his hands into his pockets. She was still enjoying you.
The soldiers laughed. My mate was used to it, that laughter, even if it made me want to roar at them, rend them to pieces. But Rhys didn't so much as grit his teeth, though the king gave him a smile that told me he was well aware of what sort of scars lingered, what my mate had done to keep Amarantha distracted, why he'd done it. Rhys smirked. Too bad it didn't end so pleasantly for her. His magic slithered through the ship, hunting down that tether for the power holding back our forces. Kill him now! The word was a chant in my blood, my mind. In his, too, I could hear it, clear as my own thoughts.
Such a remarkable girl, your mate,
the king mused. No emotion, not so much as a bit of anger beyond that cold amusement.
First Amarantha, then my pet the Ador, and then she broke past all the wards around my palace to aid your escape, not to mention...
A low laugh.
My niece and nephew.
Rage. That was rage starting to blacken in his eyes.
She savaged Dagon and Branna. And for what reason? Perhaps you should ask Tamlin.
Rhys raised a brow.
Where is he, by the way? Tamlin.
Hybern savored the name, the sound of it.
He has plans for you, after what you and your mate did to him. His court. What a mess for him to clean up, though she certainly made it easier for me to plant more of my troops in his lands.
Mother above, I'd done that.
She'll be happy to hear that.
Too long. Rhys had lingered too long, and facing him now. Fight or run. Run or fight.
Where did her gifts come from, I wonder? Or who?
The king knew. What I was. What I possessed.
I'm a lucky male to have her as my mate.
The king smiled again.
For the little time you have remaining.
I could have sworn Rhys blocked out the words. The king went on casually.
It will take everything, you know, to try to stop me. Everything you have. And it still won't be enough. And when you have given everything, and you are dead, Rhysand, when your mate is mourning over your corpse, I am going to take her.
Rhys didn't let a flicker of emotion show, sliding on that cool, amused mask over the roaring rage that surrounded me at the thought, the threat, that settled before me like a beast ready to lunge, to defend.
She defeated Amarantha. And the Adder,
Rhys countered.
I doubt you'll be much of an effort either. We'll see. Perhaps I'll give her to Tamlin when I'm done.
Fury heated Rhys's blood, and my own. Strike or flee, Rhys, I begged again. But do it now! Rhys rallied his power, and I felt it rise within him, felt him grappling to sustain his grip on it.
The spell will wear off,
the king said, waving a hand.
Another little trick I picked up while rotting away in Highburn. I don't know what you're talking about,
Rhys said mildly. They only smiled at each other. And then Rhys asked, why? The king knew what he meant.
There was room at the table for everyone. You and your ilk claimed.
The king snorted.
For humans, lesser fairies, for half-breeds. In this new world of yours, there was room at the table for everyone. So long as they thought like you. But the loyalists... How you delighted in shutting us out. Looking down your noses at us.
He gestured to the soldiers monitoring them, the battle in the bay.
You want to know why? Because we suffered. When you stifled us, when you shut us out.
Some of his soldiers grunted their agreement.
I have no interest in spending another 5 centuries seeing my people bow before human pigs. Seeing them claw at a living while you shield and coddle those mortals. Granting them our resources and wealth in exchange for nothing.
He inclined his head.
So, we shall reclaim what is ours. What was always ours. And will always be ours.
Rhys offered him a sly grin.
You can certainly try.
My mate didn't bother saying more as he hurled a slender javelin of power at him, the shot as precise as an arrow. And when it reached the king, it went right through him. It rippled, then steadied. An illusion, a shade. The king rumbled a laugh.
Did you think I'd appear at this battle myself?
He waved a hand toward the soldiers still watching.
A taste. This battle is only a taste for you. To whet your appetite.
Then he was gone. The magic leaking from the boat, the oily sheen it had laid over Rhys's power. It vanished too. Rhys allowed the Highburn soldiers aboard the ship, aboard the ones around him. The honor of at least lifting their blades. Then, he turned them all into nothing but red mist and splinters floating on the waves. Chapter 38 More was shaking me. I only knew it because Rhys threw me out of his mind the moment he unleashed himself upon those soldiers.
You were here too long.
Was all he said, caressing a dark talon down my face. Then, I was out, stumbling down the bond, his shield slamming shut behind me.
Feyre, Moore was saying, fingers digging into my shoulders through my leathers. Feyre!
I blinked. The sun and blood and narrow street coming into focus. Blinked, and then vomited all over the cobblestones between us. People, shaken and petrified, only stared.
This way, Moore said, and looped her arm around my waist as she led me into a dusty, empty alley, far from watching eyes.
I barely took in the city and bay and sea beyond, barely noticed that a mighty maelstrom of darkness and water and wind was now shoving Highburn's fleet back over the horizon, as if Tarquin's and Rhys's powers had been unleashed by the king's vanishing. I made it to a pile of fallen stones from the half-wrecked building beside us when I vomited again. And again. Moore put a hand on my back, rubbing soothing circles as I retched.
I did the same after my first battle. We all did.
It wasn't even a battle. Not in the way I'd pictured. Army against army on some unremarkable battlefield. Chaotic and muddy. Even the real battle today had been out on the sea, where the Illyrians were now sailing inland. I couldn't bear to start counting how many made the return trip. I didn't know how Moore or Rhys or Cassian or Asriel could bear it. And what I'd just seen.
The king was here, I breathed.
Moore's hand stilled on my back.
What?
I leaned my brow against the sun-warmed brick of the building before me and told her what I'd seen in Rhys's mind. The king. He'd been here and yet not here. Another trick, another spell. No wonder Rhys hadn't been able to attack his mind. The king hadn't been present to do so. I closed my eyes as I finished, pressing my brow harder into the brick. Blood and sweat still coated me. I tried to remember the usual fit of my soul in my body, the priority of things, my way of looking at the world. What to do with my limbs in the stillness? How did I usually position my hands without a blade between them? How did I stop moving? Moore squeezed my shoulder as if she understood the racing thoughts, the foreignness of my body. The war had raged for 7 years. Years. How long would this one last? "We should find the others," she said, and helped me straighten before winnowing us back to the palace towering high above. I couldn't bring myself to send another thought down the bond, see where Rhys was. I didn't want him to see me, feel me in such a state, even if I knew he wouldn't judge. He too had spilled blood on the battlefield today, and many others before it, all my friends had. And I could understand, just for a heartbeat, as the wind tore around us, why some rulers, human and fey, had bowed before Highburn. Bowed, rather than face this. It wasn't only the cost of life that ripped and devastated and sundered. It was the altering of a soul with it. The realization that I could perhaps go back home to Valaris, perhaps see peace achieved and cities rebuilt. But this battle, this war, I would be the thing forever changed. War would linger with me, long after it had ended. Some invisible scar that would, perhaps, fade, but never wholly vanish. But for my home, for Prithian and the human territory and so many others, I would clean my blades and wash the blood from my skin. And I would do it again and again and again. The middle level of the palace was a flurry of motion. Blood-drenched summer court soldiers limped around healers and servants rushing to the injured being laid on the floor. The stream through the center of the hall ran red. More and more winnowed in, borne by wide-eyed High Fae. A few Illyrians, just as bloody but eyes clear, hauled in their own wounded through the open windows and balcony doors. Moore and I scanned the space, the throngs of people, the reek of death and screams of the injured. I tried to swallow, but my mouth was too dry. "Where are..." I recognized the warrior the same moment he spied me. Varian, kneeling over an injured soldier with his thigh in ribbons, went utterly still as our eyes met. His brown skin was splattered in blood as bright as the rubies they'd sent to us. His white hair plastered to his head, as if he'd just chucked off his helmet. He whistled through his teeth, and a soldier appeared at his side, taking up his position of tying a tourniquet around the hurt male's thigh. The Prince of Adriata rose to his feet. I didn't have any magic left in me to shield. After seeing Rhys with the king, there was only an empty pit where my fear had been a wild sea within me. But I felt Moore's power slide into place between us. There was a death promise on my head. From them. Varian approached. Slowly. Stiffly. As if his entire body ached. Though his handsome face revealed nothing. Only bone-weary exhaustion. His mouth opened, then shut. I didn't have words either. So Varian rasped, his voice hoarse enough that I knew he'd been screaming for a long, long time. "He's in the oak dining room." The one where I had first dined with them. I just nodded at the prince and began easing my way through the crowd, Moore keeping close to my side. I'd thought Varian meant Rhysand, but it was Tarquin who stood in gore-flecked silver armor at the dining table, maps and charts before him, summer court fae either blood-soaked or pristine filling the sunny chamber. The High Lord of the Summer Court looked up from the table as we paused on the threshold. Took in me, then Moore. The kindness, the consideration that I had last seen on the High Lord's face, was gone, replaced by a grim, cold thing that made my stomach turn. Blood had clotted from a thick slice down his neck, the caked bits crumbling away as Tarquin glanced to the people in the room and said, "Leave us." No one even dared glance twice at him as they filed out. I had done a horrible thing the last time we were here. I had lied and stolen. I had torn into his mind and tricked him into believing me innocent, harmless. I didn't blame him for the blood ruby he had sent. But if he sought to exact his vengeance now...
"I heard you two cleared the palace, and helped clear the island."
His words were low, lifeless. Mor inclined her head. "Your soldiers fought bravely beside us." Tarquin ignored her, his crushing turquoise eyes upon me, taking in the blood, the wounds, the leathers, then the mating band on my finger. The star sapphire dull, blood-crusted between the delicate folds and arcs of metal.
"I thought you came to finish the job,"
Tarquin said to me. I didn't dare move.
"I heard Tamlin took you. Then I heard the Spring Court fell, collapsed from within, its people in revolt, and you had vanished. And when I saw the Illyrian Legion sweeping in, I thought you had come for me too, to help Highburn finish us off."
Varian had not told him of the message he'd snuck to Amarin. Not a call for aid, but a frantic warning for Amarin to save herself. Tarquin hadn't known that we'd be coming.
"We would never ally with Highburn," Mor said.
"I am talking to Feyre Archeron."
I'd never heard Tarquin use that tone. Mor bristled, but said nothing.
"Why?"
Tarquin demanded, sunlight glinting on his armor, whose delicate overlapping scales were fashioned after a fish's. I didn't know what he meant. Why had we deceived and stolen from him? Why had we come to help? Why to both? "Our dreams are the same," was all I could think to say. A united realm in which lesser fairies were no longer shoved down, a better world. The opposite of what Highburn fought for, what his allies fought for.
"Is that how you justified stealing from me?"
My heart stumbled a beat. Rhysand said from behind me, no doubt having winnowed in,
"My mate and I had our reasons, Tarquin."
My knees nearly buckled at the evenness in his voice, at the blood-speckled face that still revealed no sign of great injury, at the dark armor, the twin to Azrael's and Cassian's, that had held intact, despite a few deep scratches I could barely stand to note.
Cassian and Azrael?
Fine. Overseeing the Illyrian injured and setting up camp in the hills. Tarquin glanced between us.
"Mate."
"Wasn't it obvious?"
Rhysand asked with a wink. But there was an edge in his eyes, sharp and haunted. My chest tightened. "Did the king leave some sort of trap to..." He slid a hand against my back.
"No. No, I'm all right. Pissed I didn't see that he was an illusion, but fine."
Tarquin's face didn't so much as shift from that cold wrath.
"When you went into the Spring Court and deceived Tamlin as well about your true nature, when you destroyed his territory, you left the door open for Highburn. They docked in his harbors.
No doubt to wait for the wall to collapse and then sail south." Tarquin snarled.
"It was an easy trip to my doorstep. You did this."
I could have sworn I felt Rhys flinch through the bond, but my mate said calmly,
"We did nothing. Highburn chooses its actions, not us."
He jerked his chin toward Tarquin.
"My force shall remain camped in the hills until you've deemed the city secure. Then we will go."
And you plan to steal anything else before you do?
Rhys went utterly still. Debating, I realized whether to apologize, explain. I spared him from the choice. Tend to your wounded, Tarquin.
Don't give me orders.
The face of the former Summer Court Admiral, the prince who had commanded the fleet in the harbor until the title was thrust upon him. I took in the weariness fogging his eyes, the anger and grief. People had died. Many people. The city he had fought so hard to rebuild, the people who had tried to fight past the scars of Amarantha. "We are at your disposal," I said to him, and walked out. Moore kept close, and we emerged into the hall to find a cluster of his advisors and soldiers watching us carefully. Behind us, Rhys said to Tarquin, "I didn't have a choice. I did it to try to avoid this, Tarquin. To stop Highburn before he got this far." His voice was strained. Tarquin only said,
"Get out. And take your army with you. We can hold the bay now that they don't have surprise on their side."
Silence. Moore and I lingered just outside the open doors, not turning back, but both of us listening. Listening as Rhysan said,
"I saw enough of Highburn in the war to tell you this attack is just a fraction of what the king plans to unleash."
A pause. "Come to the meeting, Tarquin. We need you. Prithian needs you." Another beat of quiet. Then Tarquin said,
"Get out."
"Feyre's offer holds. We are at your disposal."
"Take your mate and leave. And I'd suggest warning her not to give High Lords orders."
I stiffened, about to whirl around, when Rhys said,
"She is a High Lady of the Night Court. She may do as she wishes."
The wall of Fae standing before us withdrew slightly. Now studying me, some gaping. A murmur rippled through them. Tarquin let out a low, bitter laugh.
"You do love to spit on tradition."
Rhys didn't say anything more, his strolling footsteps sounding over the tiled floor until his hand warmed my shoulder. I looked up at him, aware of all who gawked at us, at me. Rhys pressed a kiss to my sweaty, blood-crusted temple, and we vanished. Chapter 39. The Illyrian camp remained in the hills above Adriata, mostly because there were so many injured that we couldn't move them until they'd healed enough to survive it. Wings shredded, guts dangling out, faces mauled. I don't know how my friends were still standing as they tended to the wounded as much as they could. I barely saw Azrael, who had set up a tent to organize the information pouring in from his scouts. The Highburn fleet had retreated. Not to the Spring Court, but across the sea. No sign of any other forces waiting to strike. No whisper of Tamlin or Jurian. Cassian, though. He limped through the injured laid out on the rocky, dry ground, offering kernels of praise or comfort to the soldiers who had not yet been tended. With the siphons, he could do quick battlefield patching, but nothing extensive, nothing intricate. His face, whenever we crossed paths as I fetched supplies for the healers working without rest, was grave. Gaunt. He still wore his armor, and though he'd rinsed the blood from his skin, it clung near the neck of his breastplate. The dullness in his hazel eyes was the same as that glazing my own, and Moore's. But Rhys, his eyes were clear, alert. His expression grim, but it was to him the soldiers looked. And he was everything he should be. A High Lord, confident in his victory, whose forces had smashed through the Highburn fleet and saved a city of innocents. The toll it had taken on his own soldiers was difficult, but a worthy cost for victory. He strolled through the camp, overseeing the wounded, the information Azrael handed him, checking in with his commanders, still in his Illyrian armor. but wings gone. They'd vanished before he'd appeared in Tarquin's chamber. The sun set, leaving a blanket of darkness over the city lying below. So much darker than I'd last beheld it, alive and glittering with light. But this new darkness... We had seen it in Valaris after the attack. We now knew it too well. Phalites bobbed over our camp, gilding the talons of all those Illyrian wings as they worked or lay injured. I knew many looked to me, their High Lady. But I couldn't muster Rhys's ease, his quiet triumph. So I kept fetching bowls of fresh water, kept hauling away the bloodied ones, helped pin down screaming soldiers until my teeth clacked against each other with the force of their thrashing. I sat down only when my legs could no longer keep me upright, upon an overturned bucket outside the healer's tent. Just a few minutes. I'd sit for just a few minutes. I awoke inside another tent, laid upon a pile of furs, the phalite dim and soft. Rhys sat beside me, legs crossed, his hair in unusual disarray, streaked with blood, as if it had coated his hands when he dragged them through it. "How long was I out?" My words were a rasp. He lifted his head from where he'd been studying some array of papers spread on the fur before him. 3 hours. Dawn is still far off. You should sleep." But I propped myself on my elbows. "You're not." He shrugged, sipping from the water goblet set beside him. "I'm not the one who fell face first off a bucket into the mud." His wry smile faded. "How are you feeling?" I almost said fine, but... "I'm still figuring out what to feel." A careful nod. "Open war is like that. It takes a while to decide how to deal with everything that it brings. The costs." I sat up fully, scanning the papers he'd laid out. Casualty lists. Only 100 or so names on them, but... "Did you know them? The ones who died?" His violet eyes shuddered. "A few. Tarquin lost many more than we did." "Who tells their families?" "Cassian. He'll send out lists once dawn arrives, when we see who survives the night. He'll visit their families if he knew them." I remembered that Rhys had once told me he'd scanned casualty lists for his friends in the war. The dread they'd all felt, waiting to see if a familiar name was on them. So many shadows clouded those violet eyes. I laid a hand on his own. He studied my fingers on his, the arcs of dirt beneath my fingernails. "The king only came today," he said at last, "to taunt me. The library attack, this battle, it was a way to toy with me. Us." I touched his jaw. Cold. His skin was cold, despite the warm summer night pressing on us. "You are not going to die in this war, Rhysand." His attention snapped to me. I cupped his face in both hands now. "Don't you listen to a word he says. He knows about us, our histories." And that scared Rhys to death. "He knew the library. He picked it for what it meant to me, not just to take Nesta. So we learn where to hit him, and strike hard. Better yet, we kill him before he can do any further harm." Rhys shook his head slightly, removing his face from my hands. "If it was only the king to contend with, but with a cauldron in his arsenal." And it was the way his shoulders began to curve in, the way his chin dipped ever so slightly. I grabbed his hand again. "We need allies," I said, my eyes burning. "We can't face the brunt of this war alone." "I know." The words were heavy, weary. "Move the meeting with the High Lord sooner. 3 days from now." "I will."
I'd never heard that tone, that quiet. And it was precisely because of it that I said, I love you. His head lifted, eyes churning.
There was a time when I dreamed of hearing that, he murmured. When I never thought I'd hear it from you.
He gestured to the tent, to Adriata beyond it.
Our trip here was the first time I let myself hope.
To the stars who listen, and the dreams that are answered. And yet today, with Tarquin. The world should know, I said. The world should know how good you are, Rhysand. How wonderful all of you are.
I can't tell if I should be worried that you're saying such nice things about me. Maybe the king's taunting did get to you.
I pinched his arm, and he let out a low laugh before raising my face to study my eyes. He angled his head.
Should I be worried?
I put a hand to his cheek once more, the silken skin now warm. You are selfless and brave and kind. You are more than I ever dreamed for myself, more than I... The words choked off and I swallowed, taking a deep breath. I wasn't sure if he needed to hear it after what the king had said, but I needed to say it. Starlight now danced in his eyes, but I went on. At this meeting with the other High Lords, what role will you play?
The usual one.
I nodded, having anticipated his answer. And the others will play their usual roles, too.
And?
I slid my hand from his face and put it over his heart. I think the time has come for us to remove the masks, to stop playing the part. He waited, hearing me out. Valaris is secret no longer. The king knows too much about us. Who we are, what we are. And if we're to ally with the other High Lords, I think they need the truth. They will need the truth in order to trust us. The truth about who you really are. Who Mor and Cassian and Azriel really are. Look at how poorly things went with Tarquin today. We can't let it continue like this. So no Mor masks. No Mor roles to play. We go as ourselves. As a family. If anything, the king's taunting had told me that. Games were over. There would be no Mor disguises. No Mor lies. Perhaps he thought it'd drive us toward continuing to do such things. But to stand a chance. Perhaps victory lay in the other direction. In honesty. With us standing together as precisely who we were. I waited for Rhys to tell me that I was young and inexperienced, that I knew nothing of politics and Mor. Yet Rhys only brushed his thumb over my cheek.
They may be angry at the lies we've fed them over the centuries.
Then we will make it clear that we understand their feelings, and make it clear that we had no alternative way to protect our people.
We'll show them the Court of Dreams,
he said quietly. I nodded. We'd show them, and also show Kyr and Eris and Baron, show who we were to our allies and our enemies. Stars glimmered and burned out in those beautiful eyes.
And what of your powers?
The king had known of them, too, or guessed at it. I knew from his cautious tone that he'd already formed an opinion, but the choice was mine. He'd face it at my side no matter what I decided. And as I thought it through, I think they'll see the revealing of our good sides as manipulative, if it also comes out that your mate has stolen power from them all. If the king plans to use that information against us, we'll deal with that later.
Technically, that power was gifted, but you're right. We'll have to walk a fine enough line regarding how we show ourselves. Spin it the right way so they don't think it's a trap or scheme. But when it comes to you...
Darkness blotted out the stars in his eyes. The darkness of assassins and thieves. the darkness of uncompromising death.
You could tip the scale in Hybern's favor if any of them are considering an alliance. Baron alone might try to kill you, with or without this war. I doubt even Eris could keep him from it.
I could have sworn the war camp shuddered at the power that rumbled awake, the wrath. Voices outside the tent dropped to whispers, or outright silence. But I leaned over and kissed him lightly.
"We'll deal with it," I said into his mouth. He pulled his mouth from mine, his face grave.
"We keep all your powers but the ones I gave you hidden. As my High Lady, you will have been expected to have received some."
I swallowed hard, nodding, and took a long drink from his goblet of water. No more lies, no more deceptions, beyond my magic. Let Tarquin be the first and last casualty of our deceit.
I chewed on my lip. "What about Miriam and Draken? Have you learned anything about where they might have gone? Along with that legion of aerial warriors?"
The question seemed to drag him from wherever he'd gone while contemplating what now lay before us. We sighed, scanning those casualty lists again. The dark ink seemed to absorb the dim phalite.
"No. Az's spies have found no trace of them in any of the surrounding territories."
He rubbed his temple.
"How do you vanish an entire people?"
I frowned. I suppose Jirion's tactic to draw them out worked against him. Jirion. There hadn't been a whisper of him at the battle today.
"It would seem so."
He shook his head, the light dancing in the raven black locks of his hair.
"I should have established protocols with them centuries ago. Ways to contact them, for them to contact us, if we ever needed help."
"Why didn't you?"
"They wanted to be forgotten by the world. And when I saw how peaceful Cretaea became, I didn't want the world to intrude on them either."
A muscle flickered in his jaw. "If we did somehow find them, would that be enough, though? If we can stop the wall from sundering first, I mean, our forces and Draken's, perhaps even Queen Vasa if Lucian can find her, against all of Hybern? Against whatever gambits or spells the king still planned to unleash." Rhys was quiet for a moment.
"It might have to be."
It was the way his voice went hoarse, the way his eyes guttered, that made me press a kiss to his mouth as I laid a hand upon his chest and pushed him down upon the furs. His brows rose, but a half-smile appeared on his lips.
"There's little privacy in a war camp," he warned, some of the light coming back to his eyes.
I only straddled him, unfastening the button at the top of his dark jacket, the one below it.
"Then I suppose you'll have to be quiet," I said,
working my way down the front of the jacket until it gaped open to reveal the shirt beneath. I traced a finger of the whorl of tattoo peeking out near his neck.
"When I saw you facing the king today..."
He brushed his fingers against my thighs.
"I know. I felt you."
I tugged on the hem of his shirt, and he rose onto his elbows, helping me remove his jacket, then the shirt beneath. A bruise marred his ribs. An angry splotch.
"It's fine," he said, before I could speak.
"A lucky shot."
"With what?"
Again that half-smile.
"A spear?"
My heart stopped.
I delicately brushed the bruise, swallowing hard. "Tipped in Fabane. My shield blocked most of it, but not enough to avoid the impact."
Dread curled in my stomach. But I leaned down and brushed a kiss over the bruise. Rhys loosed a long breath, his body seeming to settle. Calm. So I kissed the bruise again. Moved lower. He drew idle circles on my shoulder, my back. I felt his shield settle around our tent as I unbuttoned his pants, as I kissed my way across the muscled pain of his stomach. Lower. Rhys's hand slid into my hair as the rest of his clothes vanished. I stroked my hand over him once, twice, luxuriating in the feel of him,
And knowing he was here, we were both here. Safe. Then, I echoed the movement with my mouth. His growls of pleasure filled the tent, drowning out the distant cries of the injured and dying. Life and death, hovering so close, whispering in our ears. But I tasted Rhys, worshipped him with my hands and mouth, and then my body, and hoped that this shard of life we offered up, this undimming light between us, would drive death a bit further away. At least for another day. Only a few more Illyrians died during the night. But high up in the hills, the screams and wails of Tarquin's people rose to us on plumes of smoke from the still-burning fires Hybern had set. They continued burning when we left in the early hours after dawn, winnowing back to Valaris. Cassian and Asriel remained to lead the Illyrian legions to their new camp on our southern borders, and the former left from there to fly into the steppes, to offer his condolences to a few of those families. Nesta was waiting for us in the foyer of the townhouse, Amryn seething in a chair before the unlit fireplace of the sitting room. No sign of Elaine, but before I could ask, Nesta demanded, "What happened?" Rhys glanced to me, then to Amryn, who had shot to her feet and was now watching us with the same expression as Nesta's. My mate said to my sister, "There was a battle. We won." "We know that," Amryn said, her small feet near silent on the rugs as she strode for us. "What happened with Tarquin?" Mor took a breath to say something about Varian that would likely not end well for any of us, so I cut in. "Well, he didn't try to slaughter us on sight, so things went decently?" Rhys gave me a bemused look. "The royal family remains alive and well. Tarquin's armada suffered losses, but Cressida and Varian were unscathed." Something tight in Amryn's face seemed to relax at the words. His careful, diplomatic words. But Nesta was glancing between us all, her back still stiff, mouth a thin line. "Where is he?"
"Who?"
Rhys crooned.
"Cassian."
I didn't think I'd ever heard his name from her lips. Cassian had always been him, or that one. And Nesta had been pacing in the foyer, as if she was worried. I opened my mouth, but Mor beat me to it.
"He's busy."
I'd never heard her voice so sharp, icy. Nesta held Moore's stare. Her jaw tightened, then relaxed, then tightened, as if fighting some battle to keep questions in. Mor didn't drop her gaze. Mor had never seemed ruffled by mention of Cassian's past lovers, perhaps because they'd never meant much, not in the ways that counted. But if the Illyrian warrior no longer stood as a physical and emotional buffer between her and Asriel, and worse, if the person who caused that vacancy was Nesta... Moore said flatly,
"When he gets back, keep your forked tongue behind your teeth."
My heart leaped into a furious beat, my arms slack at my sides at the insult, the threat. But Rhys said,
"Moore?"
She slowly, so slowly, looked at him. There was nothing but uncompromising will in Rhys's face.
"We now leave for the meeting in 3 days. Send out dispatches to the other High Lords to inform them, and I'm done debating where to meet. Pick a place and be done with it."
She stared him down for a heartbeat, then dragged her gaze back to my sister. Nesta's face had not altered, the coldness limning it unbending. She was so still, she seemed to barely be breathing. But she did not balk. She did not avert her eyes from the Morrigan. Mor vanished with hardly a blink. Nesta only turned and headed for the sitting room, where I noticed books had been laid on the low-lying table before the hearth. Amryn flowed in behind her, tossing a backward look over a shoulder at Rhys. The motion shifted her gray blouse enough,
but I caught the sparkle of red peeking beneath the fabric. The necklace of rubies that she wore, hidden beneath her shirt, gifted from Varian. But Rhys nodded to Amryn, and the female asked my sister,
"Where were we?"
Nesta sat in the armchair, holding herself tightly enough that the whites of her knuckles arced through her skin. "You were explaining how the territory lines were formed between courts." The words were distant, brittle, and... "They've also taken up history lessons?"
"I'm as shocked as you are that the house is still standing."
I swallowed my laugh, linking my arm through his and tugging him down the hall. It had been a while since I'd seen him so... dirty. We both needed a bath. But there was something I had to do first. Needed to do. Behind us, Amryn murmured to Nesta, "Cassian has gone to war many times, girl. He isn't general of Rhys's forces for nothing. This battle was a skirmish compared to what lies ahead. He's likely visiting the families of the fallen as we speak. He'll be back before the meeting." Nesta said, "I don't care." At least she was talking again. I halted Rhys halfway down the hall. With so many listening ears in the house, I said down the bond, "Take me to the prison. Right now." Rhys asked no questions. Chapter 40. I had no bone to bring with me. And though every step up that hillside and then down into the dark ripped and weighed on me, I kept moving. Kept planting one foot in front of the other. I had the feeling Rhys did the same. Standing before the bone carver 2 hours later, the ancient death god still wearing my would-be son's skin, I said, "Find another object that you desire." The carver's violet eyes flared.
"Why does the High Lord linger in the hall?"
"He has little interest in seeing you." Partially true. Rhys had wondered if the blow to his pride would work in our favor.
"You reek of blood and death."
The carver breathed in a great lungful of air, of my scent. "Pick another object than the Ouroboros," was all I said. Hiber knew about our histories, our would-be allies. There remained a shred of hope that he would not see the carver coming.
"I desire nothing else than my window to the world."
I avoided the urge to clench my hands into fists.
"I could offer you so many other things."
My voice turned low, honeyed.
"You are afraid to claim the mirror."
The bone carver angled his head.
"Why?"
"You are not afraid of it?"
"No."
A little smile. He leaned to the side.
"Are you frightened of it too, Rhysand?"
My mate didn't bother to answer from the hall, though he did come to lean against the threshold, crossing his arms. The carver sighed at the sight of him, the dirt and blood, and wrinkled his nose and said,
"Oh, I much prefer you bloodied up."
"Pick something else," I replied. "And not a fool's errand this time."
"What would you give me? Riches do me no good down here. Power holds no sway over the stone."
He chuckled.
"What about your firstborn?"
A secret smile as he gestured with that small boy's hand to himself. Rhys's attention slid to me. Surprise. Surprise, and then something deeper, more tender, flickering on his face. "Not just any boy, then." My cheeks heated. "No, not just any boy."
"It is rude, Majesties, to speak when no one can hear you."
I sliced a glare toward the carver. "There is nothing else, then."
Nothing else that won't break me if I so much as look upon it?
Bring me the Ouroboros, and I am yours. You have my word.
I weighed the beatific expression on the carver's face before I strode out.
Where is my bone?
The demand cracked through the gloom. I kept walking, but Rhys chucked something at him.
From lunch.
The carver's hiss of outrage as a chicken bone skittered over the floor followed us out. In silence, we began the trek up through the prison. The mirror. I'd have to find some way to get it. After the meeting, just in case it did indeed destroy me. What does he look like? The question was soft, tentative. I knew who he meant. I interlaced my fingers through Rhys's and squeezed tightly. Let me show you. And as we walked through the darkness, toward that distant, still hidden light, I did. We were starving by the time we returned to the townhouse, and since neither of us felt like waiting for food to be prepared, Rhys and I headed right for the kitchen, passing by Amarin and Nesta with little more than a wave. My mouth was already watering as Rhys shouldered open the swinging door into the kitchen. But we beheld what was within, and halted. Elaine stood between Nuala and Caradwyn at the long work table, all three of them covered in flour, some sort of doughy mess on the surface before them. The two handmaiden spies instantly bowed to Rhys, and Elaine. There was a slight sparkle in her brown eyes, as if she'd been enjoying herself with them. Nuala swallowed hard.
The lady said she was hungry, so we went to make her something, but she said she wanted to learn how, so...
Hands wreathed in shadows lifted in a helpless gesture, flour drifting off them like veils of snow.
We're making bread.
Elaine was glancing between all of us, and as her eyes began to shudder, I gave her a broad smile and said,
I hope it'll be done soon. I'm starved.
Elaine offered a faint smile in return and nodded. She was hungry. She was doing something, learning something.
We're going to bathe,
I announced, even as my stomach grumbled. We'll leave you to your baking. I tugged Rhys into the hall before they'd finished saying goodbye, the kitchen door swinging shut behind us. I put a hand on my chest, leaning against the wood panels of the stair wall. Rhys's hand covered my own a heartbeat later.
That was what I felt, he said. When I saw you smile that night we dined along the Sidra.
I leaned forward, resting my brow against his chest, right over his heart. She still has a long way to go.
We all do.
He stroked a hand over my back. I leaned into the touch, savoring his warmth and strength. For long minutes we stood there, until I said,
Let's go find somewhere to eat. Outside.
He showed no sign of letting go. I looked up at last, found his eyes shining with that familiar wicked light.
I think I'm hungry for something else, he purred.
My toes curled in my boots, but I lifted my brows and said coolly,
Oh?
Rhys snipped at my earlobe, then whispered in my ear as he winnowed us up to our bedroom, where two plates of food now waited on the desk.
I owe you for last night, mate.
He gave me the courtesy, at least, of letting me pick what he consumed first. Me? Or the food?
I picked wisely.
Nesta was waiting at the breakfast table the next morning. Not for me, I realized, as her gaze slipped over me as if I were no more than a servant, but for someone else. I kept my mouth shut, not bothering to tell her Cassian was still up at the war camps. If she wouldn't ask, I wasn't getting in the middle of it. Not when Amarin claimed that my sister was close, so close to grasping whatever skill was involved in potentially patching up the wall. If she would only unleash herself, Amarin said.
I didn't dare suggest that perhaps the world wasn't quite ready for that.
I ate my breakfast in silence, my fork scraping across the plate.